I think most people are here, I hope. If not, they can always listen to the tape afterwards. So this is actually the first real talk of the retreat. As you know, the last night I was very tired, many other people quite tired. Last night's talk was just a basic welcome, hello to everybody. But now we get round to the real business of meditating. And as everybody knows, the meditation is such an important part of Buddhism. But unfortunately, very few people really know how to meditate. And because they don't really know how to meditate, they don't get success in meditation. And because they don't get success in meditation, they don't really get the full benefit of being a Buddhist. And also that they don't receive the joy of meditation. They don't receive the sense of freedom and peace, nor the sense of wisdom either. So there is... It's one of my jobs, one of the jobs of any monk or teacher, to encourage people, to teach people, to lead people in the ways of meditation, in the way of the Buddha. If any of you ever read some of the suttas, the teachings of the Buddha, which are well translated these days in good English, you'll see that again and again the Buddha talked about jhanas. Jhanas was the word which the Buddha used for meditation. That's what meditation really was, the practice of jhana. And it comes from the words of meditation, is jayati. Jhana is the result of meditation. And it's such an important part of the path of Buddhism, because not only does it give you great happiness, but it also gives you huge mindfulness, great power of mindfulness, and also gives you the data and the raw experience, so you can find out the truth of things. As the Buddha said again and again, you know, not only what I said last night, Sukhimno Chittam Samadhiyati, from happiness the mind is easily concentrated, but also from concentration, Samadhi Pachaya Yata Buddhiyana Dasana. From that concentration, from that's the cause for seeing things as they truly are, for seeing the way things are. That's what you have to do to see the nature of things. Too often that we live in delusion. We can't see we're deluded, that's just the nature of things. What we take to be one thing is actually the other. As it says in the text, what the enlightened people say is happiness, the world says is suffering. What the enlightened people say is suffering, the world takes to be happiness. And you can test that out when you go home after this retreat. What do you do after Easter? Got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, sat all day, had only one meal a day off, one meal and a breakfast, nothing to eat in the afternoon or evening. And they think you're crazy coming to a place like this. Especially those of you who come from Singapore, paid all this money to talk to yourself like this. But of course, what the world says is suffering. I know that there's happiness. You get much more happiness and bliss and peace from a meditation retreat like this than you can in any other place in the world. So, meditation offers all these wonderful things. But of course, now we have to say, what is meditation? How do we meditate? To put meditation in perspective, as I've already been trying to do, the meditation is learning about the Four Noble Truths. We say about the Four Noble Truths, you don't learn about the Four Noble Truths just from a book, no more than you can know the destination just by looking at the plan, the maps, or the travel books. To really understand the destination, you have to go there. This is what meditation is doing. It's taking you to that area where the Four Noble Truths lie, where they are clear, and where they can teach you the nature of things. It's actually the practicing the Four Noble Truths is what meditation is all about, rather than just learning about them. And when we talk about the Four Noble Truths, that people already know suffering. They've had enough suffering in their life. What people don't know is happiness. And we need to know that happiness, I mean real happiness, you know, the freedom, the bliss, the peace. Suppose we know that happiness, then we can put suffering in its perspective. We know what suffering is. It's really amazing that sometimes that you think that you're happy in this world. As a young man, before I became a monk, I was quite successful. I had a good life, according to the world in front of me. And some of my friends, especially my relations, couldn't understand why I was throwing away all that good education, and good fit body, talents, why I was throwing all that away to become a monk. And of course I knew I wasn't throwing anything away. I was actually, except suffering, I was actually gaining so much. But in the world we can't understand why until we actually go to these places and find out what real happiness truly is. So we know suffering. We think that when we really know happiness, then we have a perspective to really know what suffering is, to really put the whole world in perspective. It's like using the old simile of being born in a prison, grown up in a prison, spent all your life in a prison. You don't know what prison is, because you've got nothing to compare it with. And you think your prison is just a wonderful place. However, it's only when we go outside of that prison for the first time, when we taste freedom, where we feel peace for the first time in our lives, real contentment, real bliss, only then do we get this understanding, I've been in prison all these years. The Buddha gave this wonderful simile, like it's a blind man being sold a dirty cloth. And the man who sells him the cloth says, this is a beautiful, clean, white cloth, please wear this. It's what everyone else is wearing. The blind man buys it because he can see no better. And he buys this dirty old black cloth, very cheap, for a big amount of money. And then later on he gets his sight restored. And then he sees that he's been sold something which is not true. He's been sold something which he thought was white but was really dirty. Something which he thought was expensive, which is very cheap. Something he thought was beautiful, which is really ugly. That's what life is like. We get sold this life as something pure and costly, valuable and happy. But it's only when our eyes are opened through wisdom, born in meditation, do we see that we've been cheated in this life. What we've been taught as happiness is in fact suffering. What some people say is suffering is in fact happiness. But we have to see this for ourselves. We're actually experiencing the Four Noble Truths, the real truth of suffering and the real truth of happiness. That's the context of this meditation retreat. And to be able to understand that, we have to go deep into the happinesses of the mind. Deep inside of calmness to find what true peace really is. And that is the job of this meditation. So I mention that to make it quite plain that this is Samatha and Vipassana, all rolled in together. By going deep into peacefulness, into stillness, into bliss, that is the greatest insight you can ever have. The insight into the end of suffering. In other words, bliss and peace. We don't do this just through thinking, we do it through experience. And that experience, as I was mentioning last night, Third Noble Truth Meditation, letting go, abandoning, giving up. Please make that the most important words on this retreat. Letting go, giving up, abandoning. Because those words, eventually you'll find what they really mean. What they actually are when you meditate, just being able just to press that letting go button, to give up, to abandon, and find how easy meditation can be. If you know how to let go, meditation is so simple. And to give you an example, most of the examples you've heard before, I've only lived a certain amount of years and you can only give examples from your own experience. But that young little novice in Ajahn Chah's monastery, who could never meditate for his life before, until one evening, after a very, very long sermon by Ajahn Chah, always thinking, this little novice, when is Ajahn Chah going to stop? When is Ajahn Chah going to stop? When is the pain going to stop? When is the sitting going to stop? When is this going to stop? When is that going to stop? That's the result of reaction to suffering which we have. When is it going to stop? When is it going to stop? And this little novice just had this one moment of insight, changing around instead of when is Ajahn Chah going to stop? When is life going to stop torturing me? He said, when am I going to stop? And at that, he stopped. And he got into deep meditation for many hours. When he opened his eyes, all the monks had gone for a long time ago. And he was happy, bliss, a very happy little novice monk. And this actually shows just how easy meditation can be. No matter what you think you are as a meditator, whether you think you're experienced, not experienced, skillful, unskillful, a hopeless case, or a brilliant meditator, whatever you think, You are that close from deep meditation, just finding that, just letting go meditation, letting go button, and it's there. Another similar which I gave, which makes the same point, it's like you're trying to cross a stream from attachment over to letting go of freedom. And that stream is just so narrow, you can just jump across it. It's just so easy to jump across. We don't know the way. We go up and down that stream all our life, up and down the same bank of the stream. Up and down, up and down. When am I ever going to find a bridge? When am I ever going to get to the other side? Because we're going parallel to the stream, rather than going against it in the opposite direction. That's why we never cross it. All we need to do is just turn around a little bit. A slightly different attitude, a slightly different way of looking at things. And then one step and you're across that stream. You can wander up and down the bank of the stream for your whole life and never go across. But you are that close to the other side. As that little novice proved, just one little bit of, when am I going to stop? And he pressed the stopping button in his mind. He pressed the letting go button. He pressed the renouncing button. He pressed the no control button. All the same buttons. And this beautiful meditation happened. So remember that. Because whatever happens in your meditation, if there's any problem at all, any difficulty, any time when there's not bliss in the mind, it means that you are doing something. You're attaching, you're controlling. That's why it's not happening. So also in this meditation we really learn about what attachment truly is. Many people, monks, nuns, talk about attachments in the world, but they don't know the root attachments. You find those root attachments when you meditate. No, you don't find them out there in the world. That's the gross attachments you find out there in the world. But the real root attachments, why are you attached to these things in the world? Why are you worried about possessions, family, friends, relations, body, life and death? Why are you worried about those things? It all comes from these roots deep within the mind, which you will meet on the path of meditation. Every time you come across a blockage in your meditation, a place where you can go no further, a place where you can not get any more peaceful, any more clear, any more bliss, that blockage, that barrier, is called attachment. There you find why you can't go deeper, why you can't go higher. Using the simile of the hot air balloon, you can only go no higher when you've got no more ballast to throw out of your balloon. You can't find what you're attaching to, what's holding you back, what's stopping you from going higher. Because to go that little bit higher, you have to throw something out of the basket as a hot air balloon. A skillful meditator sees all these bags of ballast, all these heavy weights which keep that balloon down, sees them hidden in the corners of the basket of your mind. Yes, you are a basket case. And when you find in your little basket all those things which you're holding on to, you can throw them out one by one. And you think that you've thrown everything out, you don't know what to throw further, you can't go any higher. And this is where the wisdom finds out those little bits of attachments, the little things which you squirrel away in the corners of your mind. You find them, you dig them out, that's what I was attached to. And as soon as you find that attachment, that weight, that burden, that clinging, you throw it out of the basket and you go that bit higher. You found an attachment. You found a deep attachment, the root causes of the big ones. Just like a tree, you've gone to their very roots, hidden underground, in this case hidden in your mind. When you see those, that's the problem. You can dig them out of the roots. As you dig them out of the roots, you throw away these weights in the basket, you just go that bit higher. You go higher and higher into the bliss states, into the peaceful states. And this is real experience. Stuff which is not just thoughts and words, not stuff you can argue about with your friends, but real experience deep inside of your mind, which really changes the way you look at life and changes who you are. You get so far up in that basket, And you look around and you can't see anything else in there to throw away. So then you have to throw away the basket. Throw away the basket itself, your body, the one thing which you're living in. You throw it away, cast it off from the balloon. Then you go really, really high into the jhana realms. And of course, the last thing you have to throw away, the last thing which is keeping that balloon from going out into the stratosphere and leaving samsara is you. Then you have to throw your mind away. You have to throw your will away. You have to throw you away, basically. And when you throw you away, the passenger of this balloon, then the balloon is free just to go away and never return. So it's the simile of the balloon, letting go. It's all little attachments. And it's a good simile because you can feel you're going higher and higher in the meditation. As you get more and more clear, more and more bliss, more and more peaceful, more and more refined states of consciousness. You know, you can understand what that means. That's a test for you. You know your meditation is going well by how much bliss you've got, how much peace, how much clarity, how much energy in the mind. Because mental energy is bliss. And this is what's supposed to happen. You get attached to things, and when attachment gets threatened, it's called fear. And fear does come up in the meditation from time to time. It's fear of throwing away the things in your basket, which you have to keep just in case. I need these things, I've got to do something in the world, I can't throw these things away. Chuck them out. Chuck away your basket. How can I throw the basket away? This is all I'm standing in. Throw it away. It's okay. How can I throw myself away? The hardest thing of all, to throw oneself away. It's like in Oliver Twist, one of the characters there used to say, it's like eating your own head. Imagine trying to eat your own head. How can you do it? It's an interesting proposition. Absolutely impossible in theory, but in practice you can throw yourself away. It's like eating your own head. And this is what we do in meditation. Now that's the heart of meditation, the letting go, the throwing away ballast. Those metaphors are very useful because a metaphor gives you far more information than just ordinary instructions. You can imagine that and you can actually start throwing things away, start throwing things out. You understand why, to get higher, to get a much better view. But we also have to come to the practicalities because very few people are sharp enough to be able just to understand the basic and fundamental teachings of meditation, just letting go. That's really all you need to do, but nevertheless people want more. So because of our Western minds, we have to give detailed instructions on how to let go. It's just like teaching a person how to eat. Now this is the knife, this is the fork. Wash your hands first of all before you sit at the table. Sit at the table, put one thing in on the fork at a time, and cut it up, don't slurp, have table manners. Sometimes that's what it's like for me teaching meditation, it's like table manners, that's all. Like etiquette. You know, press a moment awareness, then silence, then watch the breath. That's what it really is. It should really go quite naturally. Because you know what works. But nevertheless, I always, at this first talk in the meditation retreat, talk about this basic method to remind everybody just how important it is to know the stages of letting go. When I started writing down these stages of meditation, it wasn't that I was making these things up. It wasn't as if I was like writing a guidebook, this is how you should do it. It was a description of what happens in meditation. I was describing the experience of letting go in the different stages. Because the first thing one usually lets go of, if it happens naturally or you try this, all that has to happen is time, past and future. On a short meditation retreat, sometimes it's hard to teach timelessness. But on a 9-day meditation retreat like this, it's so easy to be timeless. You don't have to worry at all about anything whatsoever. For 9 days, you are leaving the world of time. Where you have to get to work at a certain time. You have to get a job done at a certain time. You have to call somebody at a certain time. You've got to get this essay or this book, you know, proofread at a certain time. There's so much tyranny from time in the world and here. Now, we got this schedule here, but as I said yesterday, don't even look at this schedule. Rodney was very, very kind not to actually to print these schedules out. So, you know, a lot of you don't know what. The only important things to know is breakfast and lunch. As long as you know where they are. What else do you need to know? The rest of the time is free time. So make yourself free. What we really mean by that, you know when it's morning, when the birds start singing, when it starts to get light. You know when it's evening, when it starts to get dark. You know when it's time to sleep, when the body tells you it's sleep time now. You know when it's time to wake up, because the body tells you wake up time now. You know when it's time to have a cup of tea, when it's time to have a cup of tea. Just go off and get yourself a cup of tea any time. When you go to the toilet, when you go to the loo, is it according to a program? So why do we meditate according to programs? Let's put that aside. And make this wonderful natural. Go into time business, please. Because this is not like another job. It's not like a 9-to-5 job. Was it 4:30 till 9 o'clock meditation? And the rest of the time, okay, I don't need to meditate now. And now's the time I really have to meditate. Make it like smooth and natural. So when you get into timelessness, it's so beautiful. You just sit down here, you don't care. You're not worried. You don't have to be concerned about how long you have to sit. Please don't try and beat your record of how long you can sit meditation for. Sometimes people do that, you know. They look, last time I did a 2-hour sit, this time I'm going to do a 3-hour sit. The person sitting next to me has been sitting 3.5 hours. I've got to beat them. So don't go play those games. It doesn't matter how long you're sitting for. This is one of Ajahn Chah's teachings. If sitting for long periods, sitting for many hours, was all that's needed to become enlightened, all the chickens in the world will all be arahats by now. Because they sit still on their eggs for hours and hours and hours and hours without moving. But I've yet to see an enlightened chicken. So just sitting for long periods is not the point. It's not the quantity, it's like the quality of your mind. 5 minutes of really still, beautiful meditation is worth much more than 3 or 4 hours. I've got to beat my record, I've got to beat my record. So don't even worry about time in this retreat. One little point though, just housekeeping rule, that if you do get up in whatever time your meditation still, get up very, very quietly. So no one knows you're getting up. No one knows you're walking to the door. And the same when you come back in again. Walk so quietly that no one knows. When you walk in and out of here, imagine you're a burglar. A burglar coming into a house. Because if you make any noise, somebody will know, they'll call the police, you'll get arrested and you go down for many years. So when you come in and out this hall, you're practicing to be a burglar. So quiet, so no one knows you're coming and going out. That's just out of kindness and compassion for all the people here. So if when you go home, you ask, what did you learn in this meditation retreat? You say you can learn how to be a burglar. Now, when you sit, get into timelessness. Don't worry about how much time it is. And if you can, you don't even look at your clock. You can put your watches away if you wish in your room, just leave them there. You've got locks on the doors now. There is usually a bell at lunchtime and the breakfast time. And it's something your biological clock will tell you exactly when it's lunchtime and breakfast time. You start to feel the pangs of hunger inside of you. So put aside the clock if you can and just sit when it's time to sit. Walk when it's time to walk. Rest when it's time to rest. And don't worry about the time. That way when you sit meditation, in this retreat situation, you just sit down there and you don't care, you don't notice, you're not at all worried or concerned, you're not attached to time. You get this beautiful timelessness. This retreat centre is in a monastery. And this is like a monastery retreat. In a monastery, you leave the world. And what's the first thing you leave? You leave all this time business. You know how much of a burden that is? That's this huge weight you keep, you know, in this basket of your mind. You'll throw that out. How old are you? Does that really make any sense, how old you are? Did it really feel different now than when you were sort of, you know, 5 years of age, or 20 years of age, or 50, or 100? What's the difference? The mind is ageless. It's only the body has age. It's only one of those worldly conventions we have about how old we are. Throw that away. How many years have gone past and what's happened? Throw that away. How many years are in front of you? Throw that away. The only time you've ever had is now. So get into this sacred now in this retreat. The only time you have is now, 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 now. That's the way to meditate. It doesn't matter what you've been, what's happening before. You had a really good meditation this morning or a terrible meditation this morning. That's all disappeared into the great void, into emptiness. It's crazy to think about what's happened this morning. It's absolutely idiotic to think about what's happened a moment ago. In this meditation retreat, you can completely abandon all of your past. You know what happens if a person's had difficult meditation and they think, I can't meditate. And because they think, I can't meditate, then they live up to that expectation. They can't meditate. And why is that? Because they're just imprisoning themselves from the past. What they think they can do and they can't do, based on the past. You throw away the past, and you're free from the past. You can do anything. You're not limited by your successes and failures, which have happened already. You understand how freedom works? We judge ourselves, we measure ourselves, we make ourselves from our past. And that's why we can't be free of our successes and failures. We build up the sense of self and ego based on our past. When we really understand the truth about the anatta, about self, we say, yeah, we can let go. That's not us. There's nobody there. There's no time in the past, so let that go. In the past, time was real. In the future, time will be real. Now, the only real time is now. So here we get ourselves into this mode, this attitude of mind. Always just to be in the present moment. You don't care, you don't worry, you don't carry the coffins of the past on top of your head. Those coffins of the past can be very heavy and burdensome. If you've had difficulty in the meditation, it makes the present moment unbearable. The present moment itself is easy. It's only when we load the past on top of it, that's when it's impossible to bear. And it's the same with expectations for the future. How often do we just go off into the future and have fear, excitement, anticipation, plans? Please have no plans. I'll tell you when the meditation ends, in 8 days, 9 days time, I don't know. So you don't have to worry at all about missing your plane, about meditating too much. That's all arranged for you. You don't have to worry about what day it is. You go in this beautiful time, this day. Every day is the same. Every day is no time. There's no day. There's no hour. And there you have this wonderful sense of freedom. When you come into the present moment, one of the difficulties is that for many people, we've got such a fault-finding mind. Always picking out what's wrong with things. We have to do that because that's our business, that's our life. Most of business, most of life is problem solving. And so because most of life is problem solving, most of management, most of even being in a family, most of being a monk, being an abbot, is all about problem solving. Being a manager of a retreat, just solving problems all the time. Because we've been trained to be problem solvers, we've also been trained to pick out the problems, to look out for them, to see them. Because that's our business. Here in this retreat, there's no business. So don't go looking for problems. Looking for not what's a problem, looking for what's not a problem. Looking for what's perfect, looking for what's good. If you can do that, you'll find that when you look at the present moment, it's not a problem anymore. It's not a thing which needs to be changed and managed and manipulated and set right. That's our attitude to the world, always to set things right. Here, when we look at the present moment, don't try and set it right. Allow it to be. This is life. This is our reality in this moment. And if we actually investigate it, accept it, embrace it with a bit of loving kindness and compassion, then we can stay in the present moment. Often used to investigate why sometimes you couldn't stay in the present moment, why the mind wandered off into meditation, why you fantasized, dreamed, planned, why you fell asleep in meditation. A lot of time it's a reaction to our perceived negativity of the present moment. We do find fault with it. We're not satisfied with now. We look upon it as a problem and we try and solve that problem. And the way we solve the problems of life usually is by running away. We run away into past, we run away into future, or we run away into fantasy, or we run away into sleep, into the doziness and drowsiness. That's all running away. This is not the way of meditation. We go into the present moment, not run away from it, with a non-fault-finding mind. Which is why a little bit of loving kindness, a little bit of metta, is just so helpful for us meditation. So we embrace things. Loving kindness doesn't mean that you have compassion for the things you like. Loving kindness is trained on having compassion for the things you dislike. The people who are hard to live with. The situations which are difficult to bear. The moments which, on first glance, appear unpleasant. That's where we practice loving kindness. So if you have difficulty in the present moment, try practicing loving kindness on the present moment. Embrace it. This moment we call now. This very moment, just as you're experiencing it now. Moment, the door of my heart's open to you. No matter who you are, no matter what you're doing. Painful, unpleasant, whatever. You can be. So we're not doing business with the present moment. We're not trying to change it. We're not trying to solve the problems. We're accepting and being with. That's why it's the first stage of letting go. Letting go of time. Letting go of our negativity to what's happening right now. To this. If we can't come to the present moment, to now, there's no Dhamma, there's no Four Noble Truths, there's no enlightenment to be found anywhere else. You don't get enlightened in your next life. You don't get enlightened in your next week. You get enlightened now. Any place where there's freedom. So we go into this beautiful present moment with a sense of loving kindness, with a sense of embracing. We have to try that little trick of embracing the present moment first of all, because otherwise there's a sense of rejection, a sense of repulsion. That's why so many people in the world can't stay present. They're always going, doing something else. Why is that? If you can't be present, ask yourself why. What's forcing you away from just being with this? Why? Then you actually find out this attachment to fault-finding, problem-solving, manipulating. It's all part of this doer business, which I'll talk about at great length in this retreat. When you come to the present moment, just with a bit of training, a bit of patience, it's such a nice place to be. You're free of all the worries and burdens of time. Just now. So meditating for an hour, half an hour, whatever, doesn't matter at all. 9-day retreat, 2-day retreat, 10-year retreat, doesn't matter at all. You don't worry or be concerned about time. How long you sleep, how little you sleep, who cares? When the body wants to sleep, you can sleep. Any time of the day, you're allowed to sleep. This is not just to be soft, this is just to get away from the burden of time. And if I do that, you find actually you sleep much less. And you can sleep whenever you want. It's just the nature of the psychology of things. And once you're in the present moment, just now, the next thing is always to go into the silence. And silence is just the deepening of the present moment. You get so in the present moment, so deeply in there, you can't say anything. It becomes naturally impossible for the mind to move. It's engrossed in the now. When you're really listening, you can't speak. If you really want to know the mind and the world, the universe, everything, you have to be silent. And after a while, it becomes so easy just to be in this present moment, just in silence. The mind not moving, the mind not wandering. Sometimes you ask yourself, why can't I be silent? Why is always a commentary going on in my mind? Why am I always thinking and doing things? You ask yourself that and find out the reason why. And again, it's usually for discontent. Because of discontent, the thinking is one of our escapes. It's also the delusion that by thinking we can get to know things, that we can understand things. You always know that you cannot fully realize the nature of things just by knowing all their names and knowing the relationship between those names. The truth of something is inherent in itself. You don't need to relate it to other things. Just look at it in silence and allow its truth to open out to you. This is what happens with insight. Insight happens when you're fully silent. When you're not saying a word, and the mind is just absorbing the information of the world. You can only absorb in silence. And you don't speak back at the lecturer or the teacher when they're giving the information. In the mind, you don't speak back to truth as it's teaching you. Otherwise, if you interrupt it, you spoil the whole lesson. You just have to be silent and listen. Listen with your mind, listen with your body, listen with all your senses. In silence, you can know. As you're letting go closer into the truth, and also closer into freedom. Sometimes there is a type of meditation we call asupa. This is the contemplation of the repulsive and ugly. And the Buddha gave the simile, it's just like a young man or a young girl going out for the night, dressed in finery, the girl's in makeup, well washed, clean, ready to go out. And somebody takes a carcass of a dog and slings it around their neck like a garland. They'll be disgusted, they'll be repelled, they'll be repulsed. And I say, that's what you should do with thought. You've got this beautiful mind, all clear, all wonderful, all beautiful, all sparkling. And you put these rotten carcasses of thoughts around your mind, just like rotten dogs. Smelly, 10-day dead dogs around your beautiful, radiant, blissful mind. Why do you do that? Why do you put all these terrible thoughts, all good thoughts, they're all sort of rotten carcasses. All thoughts are dead. They're dead things. Because they're describing something which has already happened. They're not flesh, they're not real, they're not about what's happening right now. They're not about the world. They're usually about old people's stuff. Thoughts are dead stuff. Silence is alive. If you want to be dead, keep thinking. If you want to live, now when you understand this, you understand this, how a good meditator is actually only thinks when they really, really have to. When somebody really forces you to wear this garland of dead dogs around your beautiful mind. Like when you have to give a talk. Otherwise, you throw that away in the first opportunity and be silent. Not to burden yourself with all these thoughts. Because once you get into silence, present moment awareness of silence, you feel so light and free. I don't need to think. Oh, what freedom. Remember the famous sculpture, Rodin Sinker? This guy with his head so heavy with thoughts, he has to be propped up. Just one neck is not enough to support it. You need a hand as well to support it. This is like the mind which is so heavy with thinking. Whenever you've really suffered in life, what's been happening? Have you been silent? Or have you been really, really thinking? The mind has just gone haywire. We've thought, thought, thought. Thinking is so dangerous, it can drive you crazy. You talk about weapon of mass destruction, that's it, thinking. So I'm going to disarm you of your weapon of mass destruction, your thinking. It can make you angry, it can make you divorced, it can make you kill yourself and kill others. Thought. Silence. You can never harm anybody from silence. Silence can accept everybody and everything. Compassion begins from silence. And that's where it lives. That's its home. And also wisdom as well. So come in this beautiful silence of the night. Give yourself time and silence will come. Once you have present moment awareness and silence well established, whatever meditation you do, you've already got the foundation really strong. Like digging in the foundations of a multi-story building. You've really dug them in, you've got this really, really strong concrete, plenty of reinforcing. And whatever you build is going to really go up quickly and it's going to last, it's not going to fall down. People fail in their meditation because they don't pay attention to the foundations. Don't spend enough time, present moment awareness and silence. You think, oh, that's easy stuff, I've done that. Let's get on to the real stuff, I want a good jhanas. So they do like 5 minutes of present moment awareness, 5 minutes of silence, now for the jhanas. 8, 9.5 days of jhana, come on. Please get to the foundations of this. Don't go too far too quickly. I've taught that many times, and people who follow that advice, they always really win out in the end. They paid lots of attention. Sometimes people do 2 or 3 days of present moment awareness and 2 or 3 days of silence. Most of the retreat just on the basic stuff. But in the last couple of days, the foundation is so strong. All the rest, the breath meditations, loving kindness, whoosh. They really go quickly because their foundations are strong. This is why we call it a basic method. Basis, foundation. That's where we build up. Once you do that, then if you're going to watch the breath, it's just so easy to watch the breath. The breath going in, the breath going out. Because you're already peaceful, the breath is usually very, very lovely. Remember, just if you do breath meditation, kasina meditation if you're into that, or loving kindness, you've got to be able to fill your mind with that meditation object. Until there's no part of the mind which is not filled with that meditation object. You can do that with loving kindness, or you can do that with the breath. So the whole mind is just filled with the breath. Nothing but the breath, only the breath. And for those of you who've done a breath meditation before, please understand that this is not nose meditation, it's not belly meditation, it's breath meditation, by which I mean it's the experience and the feeling of the breath, wherever that feeling is. It doesn't have to be at the nose, it can be at the mouth, it can be at the throat, it can be at the belly, wherever the breath is, that's where you watch it. So don't be stupid and go and look for the breath where it isn't. That's why people can't find it. Stupid. So watch the breath wherever it is. It will settle down in its own place. I mean, for years when I started meditating, I got confused. Now I learned the hard way because no one taught me. I had to find out for myself. First of all, people told me to watch the breath at the nose. So I dutifully watched the breath at the nose, which was very difficult sometimes when you had hay fever. Your nose got blocked. What am I supposed to do now? Help. There wasn't any breath going in and out by my nose, all blocked up. But then somebody came along and said, now you can watch it in the belly, and that's really good. Watch it in the belly, that didn't get blocked up, but actually it did get blocked up because sometimes you ate too much. There's a very uncomfortable feeling around the area sometimes. But sometimes you watch it in the belly and it wasn't there. Sometimes you watch it in the nose and you just get lost, you couldn't find the breath. Until something dawned upon me, hang on, the reason why you can't find the breath at the tip of the nose is because it's somewhere else. It's obvious, isn't it? But how stupid, I was so stupid, for years I messed around, wasting time. And when he realized, the Buddha said to watch the breath. Didn't say at the tip of the nose in the sutras, didn't say at the belly in the sutras, just said watch the breath. So am I breathing in or am I breathing out? How do I know? I could always answer that question, which told me what the breath was doing. So if ever when I start doing the breath meditation, that's usually what I say to myself. I interrupt the silence, am I breathing in or am I breathing out? How do I know? Ah, there's the breath. That which tells me what the breath is doing. That which tells me whether I'm breathing in. That which tells me whether I'm at the beginning of an in-breath, the end of an in-breath, the middle of an out-breath, or wherever. That which tells me what the breath is doing. That sensation, that feeling. Wherever it is, I don't care. But in fact, that had an added benefit, that particular method. Because when I didn't really care to locate the breath on the body anywhere, I just noticed a feeling of the breath, and I didn't associate that feeling with any part of the body. It meant I could let go of the body very quickly. I knew the breath, but I didn't know the body. When you knew the breath, but already abandoned perception of the body, it meant any aches and pains, itches, mosquitoes, whatever, they were beyond your consciousness. You let go of the body. If you watch the breath at the tip of the nose, or at the belly, or any other place you locate it on the body, you've opened the mind up to the body interfering and disturbing you. As soon as you can let go of the body, with its itches and aches, mosquito bites, pains, whatever, the better. The heat and the cold, as soon as you can let go of all of those perceptions, the better. So by just going to the bare attention of the breath, not worried, not connecting the breath with a part of the body, then the quicker you're free of this body. And it's important because sometimes even later on in the meditation, people get feelings of like bliss going up and down their body and power. That's nice, but you're still connected to the body. You're still being held back. There's still something you haven't thrown out of your basket. It's much better to have thrown away the body a long time earlier, so you're not even aware of the body. So when this comes up, it goes all in the mind, and none of it sort of flows over into this body. It's more pure, more powerful, more productive. So when you're watching the breath, get rid of the body as soon as possible. This is one of the things we have to let go of. The sooner we let go of, the better. Have you ever noticed when you sit meditating you get aches and pains? I get aches and pains as well, if I don't get into samadhi, deep meditation. And you've like an hour, you'd be some ache or some pain somewhere. But if you get into samadhi, 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever, it's no pain at all. It's much more fun to let go of the body as soon as possible. I don't know how it happens, why it is, you can sit much, much longer in samadhi, but you've got no pain at all. And just a little time and no samadhi, you have aches and pains, it itches all over the place. Just the mind is just so strong. So sitting and let go of the body as soon as you possibly can in this meditation. Fill the mind with the breath, not with where that breath is on the body, just with the breath. Full awareness of the breath. You just start off knowing the breath going in, going out, going in, going out. And then little by little, fill up all the gaps of the mind. From the very beginning of an in-breath, right to the end of an in-breath. Don't even pause between the breaths. Fill that mind with the gap between the breaths, the beautiful silence. Just everything stopped. The breath, the pulse of life is paused for a while before the breath starts to go out. Just for a moment, but in timelessness, moments can take on huge dimensions. And just the breath going out. Filling every moment with the breath. So there's nothing else but the breath in the mind. Just breath, some more breath. Just in the moment. That way, it's amazing just how powerful the mind becomes. All the energies of the mind focused in one place. Just with the breath. Something simple. Not controlling the breath. If you try to control it, it becomes impossible. your thinking again, your doing. Fill the mind with the breath effortlessly. It's all about letting go. What you're letting go of here, the present moment awareness, you let go of time. Silence, you let go of thinking. When you get into the breath, you're letting go of diversity and getting into unity. Getting close to non-duality. Just one thing rather than many things. So many things come up into our mind. That's why it's burdensome. You just have one thing. Just one simple thing. Just the breath and that's all. Nothing but the breath. Just breath. Breath going in, breath going out. Breath going in, breath going out. That becomes simple. As you fill the mind with the breath, if you're in the present moment, you get this wonderful experience that becomes seamless. The in-breath tends to go into the out-breath goes into the in-breath. Until the point comes you lose the perception of in and out. You don't connect the breath to the perception of in or out. It's just breath, that's all. Breath happening. You don't know when it's going in. You don't know when it's going out. You don't know if this is the beginning or the end of a breath. You just cannot tell. That perception has fallen away from the mind. All you have is just perception of breath. The same, moment after moment after moment. The simile, which is the best we have, actually comes from Visuddhimagga, from Buddhaghosa. It's obviously from one of the great teachers of that time, 1,000 years after the Buddha, who described it like a carpenter focusing on the saw. He's cutting a piece of wood with a saw, backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards. That symbolizes the in-breath and out-breath. But as the carpenter focuses just on that point where the metal saw meets the wood, after a while all the carpenter can see is just one tooth of the blade. The tooth further up the blade, the teeth further back, not tooths, teeth. The teeth further up the blade, he cannot see. The mind focuses just on this one tooth happening now. And the perception of beginning, middle or end of the saw blade completely vanishes. They just can't know that when they focus in on just this one tooth hitting this one tiny piece of wood right now. See how simple things become. How little there is to burden the mind. How you're throwing more and more things out the basket and going higher and higher. And this is a lovely stage of the meditation. Where you've just got breath. So if you ask, or the teacher asks you afterwards, what are you aware of? You just say, just aware of breath, that's all. Was it in breath and out breath? No. Can't tell. It's just breath. That is a good stage. You should be praised for getting to that. Anyone who says you're not mindful enough, they don't know what they're talking about with meditation. You are letting go. You're fully mindful. But of a limited area. Very, very limited. Just the breath happening now. Because the mind has become simple, uncluttered, not much going on. That will mean, of natural course, that the mind will start to have huge amounts of energy. Because all the energy which is usually spread out in time, which is usually used up by thinking, which is spread out through many, many things happening in the mind, is all put on one small part of the world. Like the simile of the magnifying glass collecting all the energy of the sun at one small point, giving it power. That's what you're doing. Putting all the power of the mind on just one tiny area of the world. This one breath happening now. This one part of the breath. This one moment of breathing. That's power. And you start to feel that. The mind starts to really open up, waken up, brighten up. This is where all your energy comes from in meditation. This is the power of mindfulness. Making it strong, making it bright, making it brilliant. This is where the meditation takes off. This is the stage you've heard me call the beautiful breath. The beautiful breath is just so lovely, so wonderful, just to be with this breath. So simple, the most simple thing you could imagine, but the most gorgeous thing. Over here in Western Australia, we have these wildflowers. When I first heard of these, they were so beautiful, these wildflowers. When you looked in the bush, you could hardly see them. They're tiny things. But after a while, because you start looking and you're more mindful, they're not like these in a big tulips or roses, these gross flowers which people have. These are really refined and beautiful things. You have to really look out for. When you see them, the most delicate and beautiful things. This is just what light the breath is like. Just delicate and beautiful, so small, so tiny, but so wonderful. Called the beautiful breath. And this is an important stage in the meditation. Another crucial stage, because here you're watching the breath and you feel so happy. And you just, all you want to do is just to meditate. Just keep on watching this breath. This is when people usually say at last they can understand what meditation is all about. Sit here just watching the breath go in, watching the breath go out. Not actually going in, going out, just watching the breath. They don't want to do anything else in the whole world. Just so content. When you ring the bell for the meal, it's actually a struggle. A lot of times you think, what the heck, I'm going to carry on meditating. Could eat any old time. Doesn't matter if I'm going to fast for another day. Because it's more fun than eating. It's worth starving and fasting for a day or two to enjoy just the beautiful breath. You're so content you don't want to move. This is what we're talking about. The body's gone, so you've no aches and pains. You're just with this beautiful breath. This is the joy of meditation, the happiness. Once you start getting to this stage, it's snowball from here on in. Snowball running downhill. Just let go, leave it alone, don't do anything. And that bliss, by its own nature, will get stronger and stronger and stronger. The only piece of advice is don't get afraid. To go for broke. In here to be enlightened. So now's your chance. What the heck, don't worry about it. What am I going to tell my husband afterwards when I go home and say I'm enlightened? Don't worry about those sort of things. Complete let go. See what happens. Because usually from that, you start, the breath disappears. It's so fine. Just you've got this one breath happening now, nothing else. It vanishes. But when that vanishes, because it vanishes from a place of beauty, from a place of joy, from a place of bliss, when that vanishes, the bliss remains. So often that because people don't practice the beautiful breath, they get the breath and they allow the breath to fade away before they've got this energy in the mind called bliss. They get into peaceful states. Everything is peaceful, the breath is gone, they can sit there for a long time, but it hasn't got any oomph, no power, no bliss to it. You can't go further with it. It's a dead end. So you can't go any further. The reason is because you went too quiet, too quickly, you didn't pass through the stage of the beauty. The piti sukha, the happiness and bliss of meditation. And you also, it's so much fun. So really get into that beautiful, blissful meditation. Indulge. You cannot get attached to the bliss of meditation. Don't be afraid of that attachment. It's not an attachment. It's on the way out. You're getting on the bus to Nirvana. So you don't need to worry about that one. Now you, of all the things you enjoy in the world, so many of them cause you problems and trouble. That's one enjoyment which has no problems or trouble to it at all. So please, whenever you get happiness in meditation, get right in there, enjoy it, have fun, bliss out. If there's one thing which I can teach, and if you want to find out, it's in the Buddha Sutras again and again and again, don't be afraid of that happiness. Too often people encounter a little bit of happiness and think, this is happy, it can't be right. Thinking that Buddhism is just all about sort of being dull, being boring, being into pain and torturing yourself and being disciplined and being like this martial artist who's just always sort of grim. Meditation, all the monasteries I went to were fun. The happiest monks, happiest people I've ever met were in these monasteries. And they weren't sort of, you know, having a hard time, except if they weren't meditating. So when you get into this, really get into this fun and joy. When you go back home afterwards, if you get a lot of beautiful breath meditation, then you go back home afterwards, you realize, yeah, I actually got something in this retreat. You understood something about Buddhism. At least you've got an inkling of what it means. When you end craving, it leads to nibbana. You start to taste nibbana, the bliss in meditation, the end of suffering. But you go deeper, and there's beautiful nimittas arise in the mind. Beautiful lights. So wonderful. Now you're really getting into bliss now. These are the things which unworldly, unearthly, most beautiful things you'll ever see in your life. Which is why the monks are not interested in beauty contests. We see much more beautiful things in our mind. Beautiful nimittas. Much more beautiful than supermodels. These are super nimittas, super minds. You really get into this. It is true. This is what they look like. Just so blissful, so wonderful. And this is your own mind, which is manifesting. And when you get to these stages, now you're really getting data for insight. You're seeing your mind. The body's gone. This is where you really start to have the ability, the information to really understand what life is all about. So few people have that information. But people have got all sorts of theories what life is about, what you should be doing, and what a successful life is all about, and all that sort of rubbish. Find out for yourself, just get some little bit of bliss, find out the nature of your mind. Get a good nimitta coming up, or a few of them. Once you've got those nimittas, you're on the threshold of jhanas. And also you're on the threshold of past lives and all this other wonderful stuff which people can do. And that's real insight. You find out who you were before. You find out what your mind is. You find out what bliss is. And why that's blissful, why that's happiness. Not only do you have a good time, but you get all the nice rewards as well. So this is actually what the meditation is all about. So I've gone through it bit by bit. You may have noticed it's all throwing more and more things out of your basket. Throwing more and more things. There'll be a time when you're afraid to throw some things out because you think that you're going to die if you throw that little bit extra out. If you throw the basket out, what can I hang on to anymore? If I throw out the ropes, what can I hang on to? You don't have to hang on to anything. Hanging on is called attachment. Be courageous. See if you can just let go that bit more of yourself, of what you think you are, and what you think you own. Then you'll find you don't own it, and actually it's much better not to own it. You're blissed, you're free, you're liberated. While these meditations are called liberations of the mind, vimuttis, or vimokkas, sorry. They're not full liberations, they're temporary liberations, but at least you know what it tastes like. This is the way we meditate. So, that's in a nutshell what meditation is all about. The next talk tomorrow I'll go through some of the problems in meditation. It sounds so easy, doesn't it? And it is easy if you only remember the bloody instructions and stop messing around. But because our nature has been conditioned in one way, you come from work, you come from family, you come from the world, TV, and that has a strong conditioning. So you can't expect, you know, just a few little talks on the mic that's going to sort of change all that conditioning. That's why you've got to keep hitting and hitting it again at the same point again and again and again. Then eventually you come around and see and experience and realize. That's meditation in a nutshell. Any questions? Aha, silence, great, fantastic. Okay, if you have any questions that come up during the day, I think the question basket is still outside. Is it outside? Mm-hmm. So please, you can write questions in there. Please, only one question per person a day. I say that not because I want to limit the questions, because I want to limit you thinking about questions. So if you've got many questions in one day, choose your best and put that one down. If you put it in the morning and you change your mind, get your old one out and screw it up and throw it away and put your new one in. Yeah, go on.
Do you
what you bring your mind back to. This, it doesn't matter what you're watching. It can be your breath, if you want to watch your breath, but make the present moment awareness the main thing. One thing you're really most interested in is making sure you're in the present moment. It can be listening to sounds, feeling your body, loving kindness, whatever, but make the present moment the most important thing. So you put these two guards on the mind. All the past out, all the future out. And you make those guards so strict that even just the thought you just had a moment ago, you don't even allow that to linger. No, it doesn't matter. It's much better just to see what's happening now. What's happening now? What's happening now? What's happening now? Something's happening. Usually the mind will pick the strongest sensory input. There's a feeling in the body, the sound of the car outside, sound of my voice, or the feeling of heat and cold in the body. Whatever, or the feeling of the breath. If you've done lots of breath meditation before, that becomes quite natural. And you tend to watch the breath. But you make present moment the most important thing. And that's something you do throughout the whole day. Even when you're eating your lunch, you know what most people do when they're eating their lunch? Put a spoon or a fork in, and even before the fork is halfway to the mouth, you're thinking what you're going to eat next. Usually you're two or three spoons ahead of yourself. That's not called present moment awareness, that's called greed. So just one spoon at a time, and just picking up and enjoy it. Because if you're thinking of what you're going to eat next, you're not really putting your full attention on what you're eating now. I mean, this retreat, you've got the monastery chef coming to cook today. It's a really special retreat. So he's a really good cook, professionally trained. He's putting all this effort and care into cooking. So enjoy. Enjoy every morsel of this food, every taste of it. Mmm, that's very nice. And only once all the taste is gone, you swallow. Then think what you're going to eat next. That's called present moment awareness. Yes?
Chris? And then you were saying the first stage of meditation, you unite the bliss with the breath. If you don't unite the bliss with the breath, that goes into the body and stuff. And you also then made mention there about peacefulness. Is peacefulness different from bliss?
Is peacefulness different than bliss? The more peaceful you are, the more blissful you are. It's really, really peaceful and still.
Are they the same or are they
different? Same.
So that you can try to shift the energy out of the body into the focus of the breath.
Yeah. You don't, it's not just about shift the you don't control things, you just let go of things. When you let go of the concern of the body, the bliss has got nowhere else to go. When things aren't moving, they stay where they are. That's why when there's peace, there's stillness. When there's stillness, there's power. When there's power, there's bliss. So don't go controlling and shifting energies around, because that's all you're doing things again. You never get anywhere when you do things. You'll be doing things in all your life, and the only thing you do is get into trouble. So, keep out of trouble in this retreat. Stop doing things. And just allow the thing to let go. See what you can throw out of your basket. Why can't I go higher? Where is this thing I've got to throw out? The next piece of ballast. The next attachment. The next stage of letting go is only achieved when you throw away that next stage of attachment. What is it? Why can't I go deeper? What's going on here? What am I not abandoning? This is great. This is where you really find out what attachments are. And especially when you get those nimittas coming up. So it's why is there fear there? You're about to really bliss out. And people, you know, they've been wanting to bliss out. They've been hearing me talking about bliss, 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 bliss all these years. And now it's about to happen. Why do you spoil it? Ooh, what I know about this. Attachment. And those are the real attachments. which stop you becoming enlightened, which burden you to the world. And this is this wonderful times. We're just about to be just calm. That's where you really untie attachments. Once you do it and you go through those stages, then once you untied it once, you can untie it again. And again and again and again. And after a while, it doesn't sort of tighten up again. You pass through that attachment once and for all. Okay, I think that's enough. Now, the time to do that. Not talk about it. So please remember, present moment awareness. Don't be negative. Put a lot of loving kindness in the present moment. Then you won't react with negativity. Give up fault finding. This is not problem solving. I'm managing in this retreat. Throw away all the problems. Look upon thoughts like carcasses of dead dogs hung around your beautiful mind. So don't indulge those carcasses. And that's super meditation. And get into the breath. And see how much joy you can get. The more you throw away, the more joy you get. Okay? And off you go. You can sit, you can walk. Who cares what the time is? Someone will ring the gong when it's 11 o'clock, isn't it supposed to be lunchtime? So we'll find out when lunch is. So just walk and sit, don't worry about the time.